awesome. Well, hey, thank y'all for coming. Today we're talking about principle three, turn toward each other instead of away from each other. And this happens several times a day in 100 different ways. But we're going to talk about ways to do that, ways to recognize that this is what our spouse is doing and receive that. This is a little bit different than repair attempts, but we'll get into what exactly we mean by this. So Gottman, in this first snippet, he's talking about his love lab study, where he watches couples interact with one another. This is just an observation that he does. He says, will they read or listen to the news together or silently alone? Will they chat while they eat lunch? Just all these different things. What's really occurring in these brief exchanges is that the husband and wife are connecting. They are tuning by turning toward each other. Couples who do so are building mutual trust. Those who don't are likely to lose their way. I rarely see small moments of connection in the tapes of couples who later divorce or report their marriage has permanently soured. More often, the wife doesn't even look up from her magazine or her phone. And if she does, her husband doesn't acknowledge what she says. So it's in those moments where you're talking, where you're interacting with one another, that's turning towards each other. And we'll get into more helpful terminology here in a little bit. So Gottman continues, he goes on, he says, real life romance is fueled by far more humdrum scenes. It is kept alive each time you let your spouse know he or she is valued during the grind of everyday life. In marriage, couples are always making what I call bids for each other's attention, affection, humor, or support. Bids can be seen as minor as asking for a back rub, or as significant as seeking help and carrying the burden with an aging parent is ill. The partner responds to each bid either by turning toward the spouse or turning away. A tendency to turn toward your partner is the basis of trust, emotional connection, passion, and a satisfying sex life. So this is a super helpful term for us to understand and even communicate to our spouse. Like I said a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about repair attempts, like it's helpful to say, hey, I'm making a repair attempt, and then launch into it. Making a bid for connection. This is something that happens not when the temperature is super high, but just in those everyday, like Gottman says, humdrum scenes of life, where you're making a bid for connection, where a bid for connection could be as simple as reaching across the car and trying to hold your spouse's hand. That's a bid for connection. A bid for connection is, hey, you want to watch this movie tonight? That's a bid for connection. Anything like that is a bid. And like he says, it could be something as huge as asking your spouse to help in helping with an aging parent who is ill. So a bid for connection is anything where one spouse is turning towards the other spouse, wanting to engage, wanting to be attuned, and it's the responsibility of the other spouse to turn back and respond to that bid. And let's think about this for a second, about the arguments that happen in our marriages. Okay, most arguments observed in Gottman's study and in our own marriages were not about specific topics like money or sex, but resulted from those failed bids of connection. Right? Because that's when a repair attempt that isn't received, that hurts. But even a bid for connection that isn't received, that hurts. Like he says here, the wife doesn't even look up from her magazine, and if she does, her husband doesn't acknowledge what she says. Like, there are no neutral actions in your marriage. It will either help build trust, mutual trust and admiration with your spouse, or it will detract from that. So failed bids for connection leads to a lot of dissonance, a lot of static between you and your spouse. Gottman goes on, he says, each time partners turn toward each other, they're funding what I've come to call their emotional bank account. We've talked about this. They're building up savings that, like money in the bank, can serve as a cushion when times get rough. Because they have stored an abundance of goodwill, such couples are less likely to teeter over into distrust and chronic negativity during hard times. So you only help your marriage by turning toward your spouse. And we'll get into why that's hard and ways to do that here in a little bit. But turning toward your spouse as often as you can helps build that emotional bank account. That's a positive interaction. And we've said the math is 20 positive interactions to negate one negative interaction. Okay. So the crucial thing to remember, be aware of how crucial many moments are. Don't take everyday interactions for granted. Gottman says, being helpful to each other will do far more for the strength and passion of your marriage than a two-week Bahamas getaway. And I feel like that's something, at least for me, like that's something that I get mixed up. Like I think that we have to have like big, huge, like nights away, weeks away, whatever, to really do our marriage good. And that is good. But it's also, like we said last week, doing those small things often, being helpful, being attuned, being aware of what's going on with our spouse will do far more than spending a whole bunch of money going to the Bahamas for 2 weeks, which sounds awesome, but so does just living together and doing life together and doing life together well. So now let's talk about what makes turning towards your spouse hard, okay? What makes, what's an obstacle to turning towards your spouse? The first one is missing a bid because it's wrapped in anger or other negative emotions. I feel like this happens a lot where your spouse is either stressed or angry at something else and they're making a bid for connection to you, and it comes out as anger towards you but not necessarily about you, and you just completely miss it because it comes wrapped in anger, okay? So Gottman says, so before you reply defensively to your partner, pause for a moment and search for a bid underneath your partner's harsh words. Then focus on the bid, not the delivery. If wrapping a bid in criticism is a habit in your relationship and negativity is scrambling the signals between you, work on softening your startup. Okay? So two things. One, for the partner receiving the bid, listen for the bid, not necessarily the delivery, which takes practice. That's hard because immediately, like especially if there's been lots of flooding, like if you're there's been lots of criticism and complaints, and that's just been kind of a chronic negative interaction around some issue or whatever in your marriage. Whenever you hear that, you're going to feel flooded and you're immediately going to want to draw up or either be defensive or stonewall. But Gottman says, press into that. Differentiate from your spouse. Understand that they're probably not really mad at you. They're mad at the situation and they're asking you to help. Okay. And this term differentiation, it's a term that means remaining connected to people but not allowing their emotions to impact your emotions, and not allowing their emotions to impact your emotions that impact your decisions. So if my wife is angry at something and she makes a bid for connection to me and it's wrapped in anger and I get angry, then I'm going to react in anger towards her, and that's not going to do anybody any good. So, but if I can differentiate from that, if I know what's going on in her world, and if I know what's upsetting her, and I can hear the bid and not necessarily the delivery, then I can enter in because I'm not upset. I'm worried that she's hurt or that she's angry, and that pushes me to step in and not withdraw. Okay. So missing a bid because it's wrapped in anger or other negative emotions. First thing is take deep breaths and calm yourself before you respond. Okay. Take deep breaths and calm yourself before you respond. If your spouse is just lighting you up about something, but you know you really didn't do anything wrong, then absorb that. And we'll get into something here super helpful in a minute. Absorb that and then enter in and receive that bid. The next thing that makes turning towards hard is being distracted by the wired world. Gottman says, self-distraction has become a permanent, unconscious habit for many people. All of those electronic devices have gotten us used to having our concentration and focus interrupted. This culture of distraction doesn't benefit intimate relationships, which require the opposite, the habit of being aware and paying attention. The old cliche of the husband who hides behind the newspaper has been replaced by the spouse of either gender who's tapping out texts, scanning social media, or engrossed in one of those irresistible cell phone games. So this is something that's prevalent in all of our marriages, right? Like, how often are the kids in bed, you're sitting on the couch, you're sitting in bed, and you're watching something on TV, but both of you are looking at your phones and not interacting with each other at all. So this is where it might be helpful to have a rule, like, once we're in bed, like, put the phones on the nightstand, like, engage in something together, talk, read something together, watch the same thing, not have a screen between you, and not have two screens between both of you. That way you can have those bits of connection and receive those bits of connection. Okay. Couples often ignore each other's emotional needs out of mindlessness, not malice. Mindlessness, not malice. So that's helpful to hear, right? If you make a bid for connection and your spouse doesn't respond or doesn't turn towards you, doesn't it help to know that they're doing it out of mindlessness, not malice? It's not good, right? But I think one is definitely better than the other. Like if I make a bid for connection and Aaron doesn't turn towards me, most likely it's just mindlessness. She's thinking about something else, or she's distracted, or I'm distracted if she's making a bid for to me. That helps. And that's a whole lot easier to work through than malice, because then you got some negative sentiment override and some contempt you got to work through. So, two obstacles. Don't make bids that are wrapped in anger, and be less distracted. Make cognitive room for your spouse and not, you know, whatever's on your cell phone. All right, next, how to deal with their difficult emotions, sadness, fear, anger. And I know elsewhere I called them negative emotions, but they're difficult emotions. Pete Scazzaro, a guy who's written a lot of books about emotionally healthy spirituality, emotionally healthy relationships, has this to say: the degree to which I can enter and be aware of my own emotions is the degree to which I can enter into the emotions of others. Okay? The degree to which I can enter and be aware of my own emotions is the degree to which I can enter into the emotions of others. So if my spouse, if Aaron is upset and angry about something, if I'm not present and aware of my own emotions and I haven't explored, he calls this exploring the iceberg, because 10% of the iceberg is above the water, 90% is below. So if I haven't done the work to dig into my own emotions and find out why I feel sad, angry, afraid about certain things, then I definitely can't enter into her emotions, because to me, like, why would I think that she's valid in feeling afraid, upset, angry about this if I think it's just no big deal, right? And she's going to pick up on that. But if I want to genuinely enter in and turn towards her, I need to be first aware of my own emotions so that I can be aware of her emotions. Okay. Gottman says, happy couples live by the credo, when you are in pain, the world stops and I listen. When you're in pain, the world stops and I listen. Even if you don't understand, even if you don't agree, even if you can't appreciate fully the depth of your partner's emotions, that doesn't matter. The world stops and I listen. So the first thing we do is acknowledge the difficulty. Okay? Acknowledge the difficulty. Acknowledge that what they're going through is difficult, even if it's from our perspective not. And maybe we have a better perspective on something than they do. That's not important right now. What's important is your spouse needs to feel that you're with them. It's like that old YouTube video, it's not about the nail, right? The wife's got a 6-inch nail sticking out of her head, but she just wants her husband to sit there and talk about it. And that's good, right? The next thing is self-soothe, because again, a lot of times we can interpret our partner's negative, difficult emotions as being towards us. Like, we did something, and this is something that I really struggle with. Like, when Aaron is sad, afraid, upset, angry, I interpret that as I did something to make her feel that way. And that's 9 times out of 10, that's not true. But I interpret it like that. So that's something that I have to do, is I have to self-soothe. I have to suss through, all right, did I really do something here to make her upset? Okay, if I didn't, then I can approach this in a healthier way, because if I don't, and I'm interpreting her anger, fear, sadness as something I did, then I'm not going to be in a mental headspace, an emotional space to enter in and to help. So self-soothe, do what you have to do to absorb their emotions, right? Next, remember the goal is understanding, not finding a solution. We want to understand where our spouse is coming from, not necessarily give them a solution right away, which I think is more difficult for husbands than it is for wives because we're fix-it people. That's just our natural inclination. I'm going to fix this problem. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to solve it. And then we can get past all these difficult emotions. And I think that's at the heart of it. Like, we want to fix the problem so the emotions stop and we get back to the good emotions, the happy, the quiet, the whatever. So, the goal is understanding, not finding a solution. Use exploratory statements and open-ended questions, okay? Like, tell me more about that, or what led you to feel this way, or how do you, another good one I heard was, how do you feel about that feeling? Because a lot of times we can have feelings about feelings, like I can feel guilty about feeling angry. Isn't that weird? Or I can feel anxious about being afraid. So it's weird that we have different feelings about feelings, but that's just how we're made, and that's how we function. So ask open-ended questions. Another one is don't ask why, which I thought was odd, but Gottman's got good explanation for why. People who come from a problem-solving orientation tend to love this word. But in a discussion about what your partner is feeling, why will almost always sound like criticism. Stop thinking that, you're wrong. A more helpful approach would be, what leads you to think that? Or help me understand how you decided that. Okay? So, husbands, asking why is, for us, it makes sense. Right? Why do you feel that way? It's going to hit her ears like, you shouldn't feel that way. Why are you upset about this? That's pronouncing judgment on our spouse, and it's not helpful. But what leads you to think that? Help me understand. All of that is good stuff. Another thing we need to remember is bear witness. Part of witnessing your spouse's distress is to acknowledge that his or her feelings make sense to you. They make sense to you. Even if you don't agree with it, at least it can make sense. Okay? And then another one is don't give unsolicited advice. Understanding must precede advice giving. Like, always ask if you can give advice, or just wait for them to ask for advice. Like, what should I do? That's an open door to give advice. But again, the goal is not finding a solution. The goal is understanding. So for sadness, okay, how do we deal with sadness? One thing we can do is ask what's missing. When someone is sad, usually it's because they feel that they have lost someone or something. Like, they've lost a relationship, they've lost this feeling of security, they've lost something, okay? So ask them what's missing, what's underneath the sadness. Another one is don't try to cheer your partner up. This is one that I try all the time, and it never, ever, 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 ever goes well. Like, when my wife is upset, a joke does not help. It only alienates, because what that is me invalidating her feelings and trying to move her past her feelings and showing her that I don't really care what you're feeling. I just don't like that you're feeling this way right now, and I'm going to try to get you out of it by using humor, which isn't helpful at all. It sounds good, but it's not. So don't try to cheer your partner up. It's usually more helpful to listen to sadness rather than trying to relieve it. Imagine that you're a traveler visiting the landscape of sadness. Your partner's the tour guide. This sort of being there when your partner's blue will bring you closer to the standard, don't cry. Than the standard, don't cry. So definitely don't say that. Like, if your partner's crying, don't say don't cry. And like, we do this with our kids too, right? Got a scrape or something. I did it this morning with Ellie. Like, she had a scratch. She was upset. It's like, don't cry. It's fine. You're not even bleeding. And then just done. Which, Not a great dad move. Now I feel bad about it. But we do this, and we do this with our spouses. Like, anything other than trying to enter in and have, because sadness is a bid for connection. Even though it's coming in a difficult emotion, it's a bid for connection. If your spouse lets you in enough to let you know that they're sad, that's a bid. And to respond to that with understanding instead of solution finding is huge. So that's what we do for sadness. For anger, don't take it personally. Your spouse's anger is not about you, and even if it is, becoming defensive won't help. Okay? Even if it is about you, becoming defensive won't help. Okay? And don't tell your spouse to calm down. That's like telling your spouse, don't cry. Don't tell your spouse to calm down. Your goal is not to change or censor your spouse's emotions, but to communicate that you understand and accept them, even the difficult emotions. Okay? So don't tell your spouse to calm down unless they're all hyperventilating. Then help them calm down. Don't take it personally and enter into. Let them know that you're on their side. Okay? Next, search out the goal and the obstacle. Behind most anger is the feeling of being blocked from reaching a goal. Anger is not always rational, and you may not agree with your partner's perspective or his or her level of upset, but that doesn't change your job, which is to ask questions without judgment and express understanding and empathy. Okay? For fear and stress, don't minimize it. Phrases like "don't be silly" or "there's nothing to be afraid of" may be well-intentioned, but they can come across as ridicule. That's again saying, like, why do you feel that way? You shouldn't feel this way. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's a scary world out there. There are things to be afraid of, but all of our spouses are smart. Okay, none of us married a dummy. Okay, we all know what there is to be afraid of and what there's not to be afraid of, but that doesn't help alleviate the fear. What helps alleviate the fear is having someone there understand it and walk with you through it, okay? So what about when they don't turn towards you? You make a bid, they don't turn towards you. So very often couples turn away from each other, not out of malice, but of mindlessness. They become distracted and start taking each other for granted. In such cases, realizing the importance of the little moments and paying more attention to them is usually sufficient to solve the problem. So just be aware. Like, have your eyes open. Pay attention. He goes on, he says, sometimes there are deeper reasons why couples keep missing each other. For example, when one partner rebuffs the other, it could be a sign of hostility over some festering conflict. More commonly, I found that when one spouse feels that the other doesn't connect enough, the cause is a disparity in their respective needs for intimacy and independence. Okay, so sometimes there are deeper issues why your spouse doesn't turn towards you, but that's not license to stonewall and not do it anymore. That's license to step in and go pursue them. Okay, so things to remember. Okay, things to remember. Gottman says, as we've seen, friendship is critical to a relationship's long-term health because it is the key to positive sentiment override, that powerful force that lets you maintain trust and offer each other the benefit of the doubt when conflicts arise. Okay, so that's the goal. Doing these, turning towards your spouse in these everyday bids helps boost your positive sentiment override. Biblical principle, Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Christ fulfilled the law of Christ. Jesus carried your biggest burden. He carried it with him to the cross, and he killed it there. And so we are to bear our spouse's burdens. The mark of a true believer is how well we manifest the love of Christ to others, and this starts with our spouses. You can love a coworker very easily. You can love your kids easily. You can love a random person on the street easily. But when you have a spouse who sees you and you're at your ugliest and you see them at their ugliest, that can be hard, okay? But Paul talks about this in 1 Timothy, a husband of one wife, he leads his family well. That's the mark of a true believer, is how well he loves other people, and it starts in the home, okay? So bear one another's burdens. Understand one another well enough to bear those burdens. Hebrews 4:14 through 15. Since therefore we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Jesus knows what it's like to be us. He enters in, he turns towards us, he sympathizes with how we feel and loves us through it. And this is the kind of love we're to give to our spouses, okay? To love them as Christ has loved us. All right, a few resources for you guys. So the first one is the stress-reducing conversation. This is for managing daily external stress, stress that comes from outside the relationship, like job stress, just helps you turn towards your spouse better, okay? Some key points, what giving support looks like, what it sounds like. Again, it gives you a script. Like, be an ally for your partner. Communicate understanding. Like, what a bummer, I'd be stressed out too. Another thing is, don't side with the other person. Even if you agree with the enemy, empathize with your partner's emotions. Focus on what your partner is feeling, not what your partner is receiving. Okay? Another thing is just some more open-ended questions. Like, another huge one, another question to ask is, do you feel understood yet? Say back to them what they're feeling, say back to them what they're communicating, and then ask them if they feel understood, okay? Honestly, in marriages, that's about 90% of the battle, asking them if they feel understood. They don't necessarily want a solution, they just want to be understood, okay? So that's stress-reducing conversation help. For outside stresses outside the marriage, like bad day at work, kids were going buck wild crazy, have a conversation about it. Next, positive sentiment override questionnaire. This just kind of helps you understand where you guys are in your positive sentiment override with your spouses. So again, just a diagnostic, 6 or higher, y'all have got a strong friendship. Should greatly benefit your relationship. Don't take it for granted. Below 6, this is an area for improvement. Again, it's a journey. Okay, we're not going to beat ourselves up about this. We're just going to keep moving forward. One thing he says there at the bottom: one of the ways that a couple's underlying friendship creates positive sentiment override is by helping to balance the power between partners so that neither feels slighted. When you honor and respect each other, you're usually able to appreciate the other's point of view, even if you don't agree with it. When there's an imbalance of power, there's almost inevitably a great deal of marital distress. And so the next principle is going to talk about sharing power and all this kind of stuff, which we'll modify from a biblical worldview. But that's what positive sentiment override helps with. It helps you both feel like you're equals in this. Okay. The next one is the emotional bank account. Things you can do to build in some equity in that emotional bank account. Okay. There's 61 things here. I don't encourage 56. Gossip, talk about other people. Don't do that one. Even though we all do. But don't do that. Do 51. And if you do 51, put on plays or skits together. You're required to film it and then send it into the class so we can all watch it and make fun of you and do 56 and gossip about you. Attend a funeral. Doing things like this. You're not limited to this. You're not limited to this menu. Like, do whatever works for you guys. But doing small things often, turning toward your spouse, will build some equity in your emotional bank account so that when those times come, you've got enough positive sentiment override built up to where negativity is not just going to wreck everything. You've got a buffer. You've got some cushion there. Okay? Any questions, comments about anything at all? Guilty? Leave it at the door.
No, I was thinking of trying not to solve problems.
Yeah.
Some things seem so simple. It's like, you know, it's just hard to say that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
We're just
Mm-hmm.
And usually we're well-meaning, but yeah. I do it at least partly because I'm really uncomfortable with dealing with like hard or negative emotions, quote mm-hmm. unquote, right? So it's mm-hmm. like she just wants to do real life, and that's how she's feeling. She just wants somebody to feel that with her, and
yep.
I don't like that.
Yep.
I'd rather just solve the problem so we can get back to feeling happy.
Yeah, I want to feel the good stuff. Yeah, I want to feel the good stuff. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's something that I've got to remind myself. Like, my wife's a smart person. She knows the solutions better than I do. All the time. Like, so me jumping in immediately with a solution, it's like, you really don't think I've thought about that?
Yeah, it's like driving the car when they're driving.
Hmm?
You know? It's like, I feel like I'm about to crash every 5 minutes. But somehow they make it every day.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
Just fine.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're just on the edge of
catastrophe. The state of Tennessee says that they are a good driver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's yeah. hard.
It is. It is. But hopefully doing these things, turning towards one another and helping understand each other better will help alleviate a lot of that. And honestly, a lot of that is just going back to what we said a couple weeks ago, just making cognitive room and reminding yourself, like we talked about last week, with nurturing, fondness, and admiration. Like, the first 3 weeks of that is just all internal dialogue. Like, you don't say anything to your spouse till week four because you've got to do some rewiring in your brain that my wife is a smart person. Like, she can think of solutions way better than I can. So me jumping in and offering a solution is not going to help the situation. What will help the situation is just being there and entering into it with her, which feels useless, which guys don't like, but it's better. It's better. Yeah. Yep.
You know, the electronics thing too is really hard.
Yeah.
And I, we've talked about it, but I do wonder for our kids, what do they really see? I mean, do they always see us looking at their phones? I mean, they're growing up seeing this perpetual looking at our phones all the time for everything. And if you have a question, you go to your phone.
Yep.
You have, you know, everything is on the phone. So I don't know how to really manage that.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, you want to shield them from it, but you do want to help them grow up managing it.
Yeah.
So that they can incorporate it in a positive way.
Yeah.
But it's so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just tremendously
It is hard. Yeah, it is.
It's really just reminding yourself more and be mindful of it and stuff like that. Because my wife and I keep catching ourselves doing that.
Oh.
And we just kind of like, it's an unspoken, you know, just we look at each other and it's like, yeah, it's time to just put that away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard.
But it's great though. It's hard, but once you actually put it away and spend time with your kids, it's amazing how much happier the kids are.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had discussions too with, you know, our boy. I mean, he wanted a game, and it seemed like it's a game, but it's not. There's a lot of bad to it. And so we had a conversation about that, and it went well. He understood.
Good.
By the end of it, why he couldn't have that game, and you know, just because his friends have it doesn't mean he can have it.
Yep.
And it went well. He absorbed that a lot better than I thought he would.
Yeah.
But the temptations out there, it's just, it is just, and it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you go, people are just staring at their phones.
Yep.
It's really bad.
Yep.
It is terrible. And I think even now, he's eight, and I think they're almost desensitized to it. Yeah, it's just normal.
It's crazy.
So at dinner, you know, we don't put our phones on the table. We don't, you know, we keep them away from the dinner table. But still, a lot of times conversation will lead to, what time is that tonight, you know?
And just,
grab your phone,
check it. Yep. 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 And honestly, I think it going back to what we said earlier, it goes back to how often are we seeing mom and dad not interact because of their phones. And that's, I think that's the first, one of the first steps in them navigating it well is us having a healthy use of it and seeing what that looks like. Yeah.
A lot of the world is, even where I work, you know, on the jet bridges, there's stickers, and all the jet bridges around the entire country. And what it'll say, like, this is the look of relaxation. You know, this is the look of whatever, you know, and that pictures to go with it. Mm. So one of them, I think, is relaxed. This is the look of relaxation. You got two guys cuddled up in first class. You know, one's got his head on the other guy's shoulder.
Yeah.
And I see it.